Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000, corrupting our police.
Hello. There's certainly much more that I could say about this sorry spectacle of a presidential election we've been experiencing than I said last week. And later we will talk more about the significance of the election. But today I want to return to a subject about which I've spoken on earlier programs, a subject of great urgency. That subject is the ongoing erosion of our civil liberties and the gradual conversion of the United States into a police state so that multiculturalism and the New World Order can be rammed down our throats with less danger of our rebelling. Certainly, most of you who listen to my broadcasts already are concerned about the growing intrusion of the government into the lives of all of us and about the proliferation of so-called hate crime and hate speech laws, which penalize a person for what he thinks or what he says or even what he reads or what sort of music he listens to, rather than for what he does. I believe that every decent thinking American is concerned about this tendency, this trend toward less and less freedom in America and more enforced conformity. I also believe that very few of those who are concerned understand what is behind this trend and how extraordinarily dangerous it is. That's what I want to talk about with you today. I'll start with a specific example. About 10 days ago, my office received a telephone call from a woman who identified herself as a Sergeant Schweitzer with the Northern Kentucky University Police Department in Highland Heights, Kentucky. Sergeant Schweitzer asked for me, and when I got on the line, she told me that she had an envelope on her desk which had in it what she described as hate mail. "So why are you calling me about it?" I asked her. "Because the return address on the envelope is yours," she replied. "All right," I said, "tell me what's in the envelope." She began describing the contents of the envelope. It consisted of several pieces of printed material. There were 3 or 4 printed sheets, some containing photographs, with information about racial differences between whites and blacks, anatomical differences as seen in different cranial shapes and jaw configurations, intellectual differences as seen in differing scores on standard IQ tests, and behavioral differences as seen in crime statistics. And there was a small pamphlet on an investigation of alleged gas chambers at the Auschwitz concentration camp, published by the Institute for Historical Review in California. I told the female police sergeant that none of the items she described was published by my organization, the National Alliance, although a member of my organization may have mailed the materials. I asked her about the postmark on the envelope. She said it had been mailed from East Texas and asked me whether or not the National Alliance has members in East Texas. "Yes, we have many members in East Texas," I told her. "Tell me their names," she demanded. "Of course I won't do that," I replied. "Well then," she threatened, "I'll turn this over to the FBI and they'll find out who mailed it." I was becoming a little exasperated by her tone, and so I asked her, "Sergeant Schweitzer, from what you have told me so far, I don't understand why this mailing you have is a police matter. Do you believe that a law has been broken?" "Oh yes, a law certainly has been broken," she replied. "You can't send hate material like this through the mail. It's illegal." "All right," I said, "fax me what you have, including the envelope, and I'll get back to you." And I gave her my fax number. A few minutes later, the material arrived in my office pretty much as she had described it, with a cover sheet bearing the official seal of her police department. A quick glance was all it took to see that there was nothing at all illegal about the mailing. No death threat, no extortion attempt, no attempt at fraud, not even a request for money. But I must admit that I was disheartened by this affair, because Police Sergeant Schweitzer of the Northern Kentucky University Police Department really believes that it is illegal to send through the mail information about racial differences or information about the so-called Holocaust, which is at variance with the official version presented by Steven Spielberg and Elie Wiesel. That's not only disheartening, it's also frightening. It's frightening because thousands of other law enforcement people in America share Sergeant Schweitzer's mistaken belief that it is illegal to write or say or mail anything which is not politically correct. They know politically incorrect material when they see it. And although they cannot cite a specific statute which has been violated, they believe that there must be such a statute. They believe it because that's what they have been taught. And they have been taught that because, for the past two decades, some of the most powerful Jewish pressure groups in the country, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, have been working day and night to subvert our entire law enforcement system in America. From the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Washington, all the way down to one-horse outfits such as the Northern Kentucky University Police Department in Highland Heights, Kentucky, Jewish organizations have been lobbying, bribing, infiltrating, corrupting, subverting. Here's the way it works. Imagine that you're the chief of police in Highland Heights, Kentucky. One morning, the leading politician in your community, the mayor of Highland Heights, shows up at your office, and he has the two wealthiest Jewish businessmen in the county with him, and Mr. Cohen, a representative from the Louisville, Kentucky office of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit. The Jews are dressed in $1,000 suits. They are cordial toward you, but they obviously consider themselves to be very important people. And you, being a bit of a politician yourself, are suitably impressed. The agent from the Louisville office of the Anti-Defamation League, Mr. Cohen, explains to you that his organization, the ADL, is a public service organization which works with other police departments all over the country to help them deal with the growing threat of terrorism and hate crimes. He explains that the ADL has an extensive information gathering network with many covert agents who collect information on terrorists and hate criminals and then share the information with law enforcement agencies so that they can do a better job of protecting the public and enforcing the law. He is here to offer the services of the ADL to your police department. If you are like most police chiefs, you are flattered and pleased. You don't stop to question the propriety of Mr. Cohen's proposal. You don't waste any time inquiring into what sort of organization the ADL really is. The mayor and the local fat cats have endorsed it, and that's good enough for you. After all, you are a policeman. And if there's one characteristic that most policemen have, it is respect for authority. You simply don't question people who are rich and important and have powerful political connections. When people show up in your office in $1,000 suits and act important, you genuflect. In the real world, there are very few cops like Inspector Harry Callahan, Dirty Harry in the Clint Eastwood movie by that name, who are naturally contemptuous of authority. Most of them are dyed-in-the-wool authoritarians. So, Mr. Cohen sets up a schedule for a series of training seminars for the members of your department to be conducted by ADL instructors, for a reasonable fee, of course. In these seminars, your policemen learn that there is a new type of criminal afoot who is much more dangerous, much more a threat to society than the drug dealer, or the rapist, or the child molester, or the burglar, or the armed robber. This new and more dangerous criminal is the hate criminal, and the helpful ADL instructor will teach all of your policemen how to recognize hate crimes and hate criminals. They will learn that a heterosexual white male who doesn't like Jews or blacks or Asians or Mexicans or other non-whites, or who opposes the Clinton government's open borders immigration policy, or who is against more gun control laws, is very likely to be a hate criminal. If a heterosexual white male says that he thinks there's already too much diversity in the country, or expresses his disapproval of homosexual couples, or of white women who have black boyfriends, then he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. And if he distributes any sort of printed material expressing his politically incorrect views, then he should be regarded as a potential Oklahoma City bomber. Now, as usual, I'm oversimplifying things a bit. The instructors, the ADL, and the other Jewish groups send around to brainwash police personnel are sophisticated enough and indirect enough so that it all seems irreproachable to the naive cops. Other Jews telling them to ignore the constitutional rights of people with politically incorrect views? Oh, my goodness, no. Oh, no, 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 certainly not that. The Jews let the cops know that they respect everyone's constitutional rights. But, of course, the Constitution was never meant to protect hate criminals. The First Amendment was never meant to protect all forms of speech, just as the Second Amendment is really only about government militias and bestows no individual right to keep and bear arms. Anyway, despite the sophistication, the results are crude enough. Sergeant Schweitzer of the Northern Kentucky University Police Department is a clear example of that. The Jews already have managed to persuade a lot of cops, in addition to her, that to question any detail of the official Holocaust story, or to assert that blacks and whites are different in any way except skin color, is hate, and that hate is illegal, even if they cannot cite a specific statute which is being violated. So, since there actually is no statute being violated, why is it a matter of concern to me that Jewish groups have convinced Sergeant Schweitzer and others to the contrary? Since these confused cops can't actually file charges which will stand up in court, what difference does it make? Well, you know, I believe that most people who take that attitude, what difference does it make, would not be so complacent if it were the mafia cozying up to the police and teaching them how to tell the bad guys from the good guys. Why? Because, as everyone knows, the mafia is a criminal organization. We don't want criminal organizations infiltrating and corrupting our law enforcement agencies for obvious reasons. But the fact is that the ADL also is a criminal organization, and a far more dangerous one than the mafia. Throughout its existence, the ADL has maintained intimate affiliations with Jewish racketeers and gangsters of every type, loan sharks, drug dealers, white slavers, contract killers, money launderers, smugglers, illegal weapons dealers, you name it. And the ADL has received substantial amounts of money from these Jewish gangsters. One of the ADL's principal contributors during the 1980s was the notorious Jewish crime boss, Mo Dalitz, the godfather of Las Vegas. Dalitz gave the ADL so much money from his various criminal operations that in 1985, the ADL gave a tribute banquet for him and presented him with its annual Torch of Liberty Award for that year. Shortly afterward, Dalitz was killed in a shootout with a rival gang that left seven other gangsters dead as well. More recently, the ADL had its offices in San Francisco and Los Angeles raided by police with search warrants, who found thousands of stolen confidential police files which the ADL had acquired illegally by having its operatives inside California law enforcement agencies. One might think that with a record like the ADL has, law enforcement agencies would scrupulously avoid any contact with the organization. The unfortunate fact is that most law enforcement agencies aren't even aware of the ADL's history of criminal affiliations and activities. They aren't aware of these things because the controlled media, to a large degree, have avoided saying anything about them. Cops tend to be the sort of people who believe what they are told by the mass media because of the media's aura of authority. Cops are authoritarians. If they see it on TV, they believe it. If it's not on TV, then it's not real. And the Jewish bosses of the mass media protect Jewish organizations such as the ADL. The media don't talk about the criminal nature of the ADL. Instead, they always refer to it in glowing terms as a public service organization or a human rights organization, and the cops accept this description without asking questions. Beyond the impropriety of having a criminal organization teaching our policemen who the bad guys and the good guys are, is the effect organizations such as the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center have on police attitudes and behavior. This is far more serious than a confused female police sergeant wasting her time and her department's money trying to find out who made a perfectly legal mailing of information about racial differences and Holocaust exaggerations. Cops instinctively dislike vote rockers and dissidents. They may be contemptuous of Bill Clinton as a person, but they are not contemptuous of the system of which Clinton is a part. They are naturally hostile toward anyone who questions authority or speaks out against the system. That's why a lot of black and Jewish so-called civil rights demonstrators got thumped with nightsticks or bitten by police dogs or sprayed with fire hoses back in the 1960s. Today's cops have been taught that they aren't permitted to thump blacks who demonstrate with Jesse Jackson the way they used to thump blacks who demonstrated with Martin Luther King 35 years ago. It was bad to have thumped King's demonstrators, they are told, but if they want to thump someone today, they should thump white hate criminals. And that's what they do. Dozens of members of my organization, the National Alliance, while engaged in perfectly legal distributions of printed material to the public, have been stopped by police and questioned, harassed, intimidated, had their printed material confiscated, even been arrested, because the police involved had been told by the ADL or some other Jewish organization that the National Alliance is a dangerous terrorist organization and that its members are likely to be hate criminals. 10 years ago, a 22-year-old New Jersey member was arrested for posting a National Alliance sticker which bore the message, "Earth's most endangered species, the white race, help preserve it." That's all the sticker said, but the young man who posted it was arrested and charged with ethnic terrorism, a felony offense under a hate crimes law which the ADL and other Jewish pressure groups had rammed through the New Jersey legislature. 10 years ago, the Alliance didn't have the resources it has today. At that time, we didn't even have an attorney on our staff, and the local cops were able to terrorize our young member with the threat of a long prison term. Of course, they couldn't send him to prison for posting our sticker, but he didn't know that, and it cost him a $5,000 attorney fee to get the charge against him dismissed. Today, he is the coordinator of the National Alliance's Northern New Jersey local unit, and he is stronger and more committed than ever as a result of his experience 10 years ago. But our people shouldn't have to go through experiences like that. We should not be harassed and intimidated for exercising our constitutional rights. And it's perfectly clear that the reason we often are harassed is that our law enforcement agencies have permitted criminal anti-American organizations such as the Anti-Defamation League, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and the Southern Poverty Law Center to misinform and brainwash police personnel. By doing so, these Jewish groups often are able to persuade policemen to behave as if the sort of laws the Jews are attempting to have enacted already had been enacted. The Jews are able to persuade law enforcement agencies and all too often the courts as well to behave as if they already had succeeded in abolishing the First and Second Amendments. This cozy relationship between criminal Jewish organizations and law enforcement agencies, to the point where the Jewish groups have been given quasi-official status, is a growing problem. It's a danger for all freedom-loving white Americans, not just members of the National Alliance. It's a danger we must confront and deal with. If we attempt to ignore it and hope that it will go away, it won't. It will only become worse, because the nature of the Jews is such that nothing is ever enough for them. They always keep reaching, grasping for more and more and more. Our way of dealing with this problem is not to fight the police. It's not to attack the police for being too authoritarian. In a healthy society without Jewish corruption, it's not a bad thing for the police to be authoritarian. What we must fight is the ability of the Jews to corrupt our law enforcement agencies without exposure, without public scrutiny. Since the Jews' own media won't expose them, it's up to us to do it. We don't have the media resources of Time Warner or CBS or the New York Times or the other Jewish media giants. But we do have a growing ability to reach the 2% of the white population which is capable of seeing what's happening in their world and coming to their own conclusions about it. It doesn't take too many of us shining a spotlight on the Jewish corruption of our law enforcement agencies for a few of the more astute and far-sighted police chiefs to start backing away from Semitic entanglements. It doesn't take many more of us exposing the nature of the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center and their subversion of our policemen for most law enforcement agencies to change their policies about dealing with these criminal and un-American organizations. And listen, there are many, many Americans besides me and the members of my National Alliance who don't want America to continue becoming a police state. Speak out about these things yourself, and you'll be surprised by how many others will be encouraged to speak out too. Thanks for being with me again today.